Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, listeners. And don't forget, podcast, KXORadio.com. If the show today rings your bell or you want to share it with somebody else, it has been captured in perpetuity and exists over at KXORadio.com. We are going to jump right in today, and we have a guest. His name is Rene Rodriguez. He's a master's of social work. He's working towards his licensure. He's a psychiatric social worker for the County of Imperial. Welcome. Good morning, Rene.
Good morning. Thank you very much for allowing me to be here.
Some of you some of our listeners may actually know you from your previous lifetime. You were a postal employee for quite some time, huh?
Oh, yes. I traveled to the years in the Postal Service and had a lot of different experiences as well.
So this is your second career?
Well, yes.
So if you were in the El Centro Post Office, you know, like 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, whatever, and you saw somebody who looked like, geez, that person should be a therapist. Just look at them. They're so caring. They treat my package with love and care. They have empathy for me at the front desk. You were probably dealing with Rene.
Well, thank you very much. Those were kind words.
You actually were a good employee. I mean, definitely got good service from you over.
Thank you very much.
And they're a good gang over at the El Centro Post Office. Good people, huh?
Absolutely. It's a professional crowd over there.
All of them.
Yes.
All of Post Office. But what are we going to talk about today?
Well, today I was asked to talk a little bit about depression and anxiety. This subject takes many hours to be able to clarify, but we'll try to put it all in a nutshell.
Okay.
Really quick. One thing about depression and anxiety, they coexist. And I could tell you one thing, Scott and Maria, when you run into somebody who has depression, there's a 70% chance that they're going to have a coexisting anxiety disorder. And likewise, when you run into somebody with anxiety, they may have the symptoms of depression.
Does that make it different? I mean, I guess you're the person who does the diagnosis work for sometimes, right? Because you do intake assessments?
Absolutely.
Does it make it difficult to tell who's who because there's so much stuff going on together?
Yes, mm-hmm. And that's why at Behavior Health, when we do the intakes, we're able to elicit symptom information and we're able to clarify and be able to come out with a concise diagnosis. And the important thing about that, Scott and Maria, is that if we have a client who comes in with depressive symptoms and we're not looking for any other access ones, conditions, anxiety, and, you know, what have you, we're really not treating the person as absolute as we can. Take, for example, we have somebody that comes in with depression and they say, okay, I feel sad, I'm not sleeping well. And we treat just for the depression and not for the anxiety disorder, then we're not treating the whole person.
Is this primarily adults or does it go across the board for children too?
Well, Maria,
and adolescents.
That's the whole thing too. Right now, I'm working with children and adults. However, one thing that I've been focused on, because I also do medical social work, is the elderly with the...
Don't look at me when you say it. I saw you like looking at me, going mad dogging me. Like,
yeah, the elderly with the symptoms of anxiety and disorder.
I'm prematurely gray, okay?
Yeah. And you'll be surprised to hear that many doctors are missing the symptoms of anxiety and disorder. There's a possibility of a 40 to 60% chance that a patient goes in to see their doctor and they say, Doc, you know, I'm not sleeping well, I don't feel well, and the doctor will go ahead and prescribe medication so they could be able to sleep. Now, these patients only have 5 minutes to be able to see a doctor, and the doctor goes in and prescribes what the patient needs. Yes.
Some doctors.
And that's what I'm saying. It's not other doctors. I'm not talking about Imperial mm-hmm. County. I'm talking about nationwide.
So what you're saying is when people go to their primary care physician mm-hmm. for some sort of generalized somatic complaint, like, geez, I'm having a hard time sleeping, doc, that many times those people may be suffering from a mental health disorder, and at the same time, many times those people may be just given something for their symptom, like a sleep aid for someone who can't sleep, and the underlying mental health condition doesn't get touched.
Absolutely. And, you know, many times it's, either depression or anxiety. They go in and they're given a benzodiazepine so they could go ahead and relax better.
It works really well, right?
They work very well, yes. But the gold standard of any of these disorders is medication along with psychotherapy.
Or sometimes psychotherapy.
And, yeah, psychotherapy works well, but when you have acute condition or even mm-hmm. chronic condition that affects the person's functioning, it's really important mm-hmm. to be able to offer them the best services possible to be able to get this person back on his feet or her feet. And especially with the elderly, many of them come home from the hospital, they're discharged and they're back home. And the first complaints I get, Scott and Maria, is that these people say that, hey, I used to be able to do this. I used to be able to function well. I was independent. I really didn't need anybody to help me with these chores.
We had last week a really good show, so if you missed it, you can always access to the podcast. We had acute healthcare?
Accent
healthcare.
With no MSG, because yes. We asked, because...
Yes, and it was just...
watching our health.
It was really good, and they talked about the elderly. Just
yes.
What you're talking about, that they have a lot of depression.
Yes, and Maria, I'm a medical social worker, have been for the last 10 years for Imperial Valley Home Health Care, and I'm the one they appoint to go into the homes and do the mental status examinations and to find resources for these patients, and a lot of these patients are isolated. A lot of these patients lost loved ones, lost friends.
Sounds pretty serious.
Yeah, and they many people define their lives for what they do.
Mm. And if they can't move or they're not as mobile as before, and they're homebound.
And they lost their social roles, which is a hallmark mm-hmm. of a person. They have to redefine themselves. Now, how do you do that? That's not easy. It's not easy to redefine yourself. And people...
It may not be easy.
Yes. And they just isolate themselves. And when they isolate themselves, they start feeling hopeless, and that leads into deeper and deeper depression. And, the anxiety starts setting in, and their life becomes a diminished way of living.
You know, what it sounds like what you're describing is basically that something may happen in your life that gives you a sense of loss or a sense of disconnectedness, perhaps. And then you start thinking about that negatively. You start going, oh, now it's like really bad. And it sounds like that thinking actually takes over and starts to build its own segment of this depression.
Yes, absolutely. And many people call depression a thought disorder. It's we experience something and we interpret that either in a negative or in a positive way. And people that are depressed, they experience something, a loss of independence, loss of family, loss of friends, inability to ambulate. And they seem to get lost in their own abyss.
Well, yeah, because, to experience something negative, right, and to react to that, that's like normal, right? I mean, You know, if I couldn't walk leaving the radio show today, I'd be bummed.
Yeah.
You know, it would deambulate me, and I would not be very happy with
but
that.
But you adapt.
Well,
so
that it sounds like that's what differentiates the depressed from the non-depressed.
Well, let me just say this in a nutshell. Do you know the difference between sadness, grief, and depression?
Go for it.
Well, sadness is things that disappointments, stuff that happens to us on a daily basis, and you know we're disappointed because
I didn't find my the right shoe size.
Well, yeah, I guess you could include that also, Maria. And grief is more acute sadness. It's when we lose somebody we love. It's when we experience a loss of a job, a loss of a relationship. And, you know, depression is more chronic sadness, more deeper sadness, where it starts affecting one's quality of life, and it diminishes their quality of life. And many of these people start isolating themselves, and they begin to just survive day to day, and a whole bunch of somatic symptoms like you know, headaches and fatigue start setting in, hopelessness. And, you know, as they said about depression and anxiety, a lot of people start losing focus on the outside world. And they start internalizing everything.
So I'm picturing this in my head, and I get this person who had these losses, or perceived losses, I suppose. And then it started kind of working into them, and that their thoughts shifted to kind of a negative, hopeless, no sense of positivity. And then they started seeing the rest of their life as kind of negative. And that sounds like what I'm hearing for depression. But now I'm starting to imagine, okay, now that person's, you know, isolating, they're not engaging with the world, they're not doing kind of what's expected of them. Now the bill payers are calling, and now everybody's upset with them, and now this and now that's happening. And I can imagine where anxiety would just walk in the door and say, hi, I'm here too now.
You know, Scott, you mentioned and everybody, and that makes a lot of sense because it wasn't until the 60s, the 70s, when a lot of therapists, or rather, you know, doctors and psychiatrists started saying, wait a minute, many of these people have families. So how does it affect the families? You know, you had Jay Haley's, you had Aaron Beck's, you had Virginia Satir, Murray Bowens, who said, if it's affecting a patient, how is it affecting the caregiver? How is it affecting their kids? They have brothers and sisters. How is it affecting their brothers and sisters?
Well, you just see the commercials that the pharmaceuticals put up. And, you know, if somebody has depression, and it's always, you know, it affects everyone. Even
absolutely.
The family, the kids, the spouses, the friends, even their animals.
Absolutely.
So it affects everyone.
And that's the thing there where family therapy became to be more and more widespread back in the 50s and 60s. And now, you know, when they have a patient who has some type of major depressive disorder, there's a likelihood that his spouse may be suffering from some type of mental disorder also. Depression is contagious. Not in a viral sense, but rather...
I was reaching for the hand sanitizer. That's why you said that.
But rather in a way that we communicate, that we interrelate to people. And it starts affecting the family members. So what happens? Well, a lot of people say, oh, you know, it's just my dad. And my dad, he's, you know, he's just sad and he'll get over with.
But some of us, the way we handle it is that we don't like to be around people who are negative, or, you know, start saying, you know, just how you said, they're depressed. You just, a lot of times you just, okay, just leave them alone. And
Yeah, they're life's buzzkill.
Some people react like that instead of, you know, okay, finding out what is the problem, what's going on. They just leave them, you know what?
Nah. I'm not sure how to help this person, they're bringing me down. And,
yeah, exactly. I'm just...
You know, Maria, you bring up a good point there. One thing that we want to do, not leave them alone, but rather encourage them.
What's going on?
Encourage them to be more active. Encourage them to exercise. Encourage them to join different organizations. There's senior programs out there. Encourage them to be able to volunteer. There's exercise. There's a whole bunch of things they could do. There's meditation. There's yoga. And the important thing is to be able to have them active. The important thing is to have them try to start gaining more and more control of their lives.
So what you're saying in particular for depression is that people kind of get hung up in this place and they basically stop engaging with life. And so to re-engage them with life in some sort of ways that work for them, I suppose, is the key to getting out of it.
Absolutely, Scott. And, you know, going into that treatment, a lot of patients, their family members take him into the doctor's office. And, you know, they prescribe some SSRIs.
We have an acronym rule.
Yeah, actually the antidepressant medications.
Yeah, there you go.
And anti-anxiety medications. But, you know, also what's really important is for them and for the family to be able to set a plan on what can they could do to be able to join different organizations.
So lifestyle may be a contributing factor to the disorder. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we all define ourselves for what we do. And when you lose that sense of role, you lost that role in your life and you have nothing but just the television that you rely on, and you're not able to talk to neighbors, you're not able to interact with other people, then you start losing a sense of control of your life.
I remember still to this day, the day that I realized that the people that were playing professional basketball and me were never going to share the same path, and that window had closed for me forever, and I was going to have to move on from my, you know, 7-year-old dreams of being a professional athlete. Yeah, I remember that. We're going to take a short break. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness here in the Imperial Valley. I'm Scott, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
Welcome back. This could be Maria, but it's not. It's Scott, your co-host on Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness here in Imperial Valley. It is 8:09, almost 8:10. 337-8874 is the phone number. We're here today with Rene Rodriguez. He's Masters of Social Work. He's a psychiatric social worker for Imperial County. He's working with adults and children in the mental health division. And the topic on the table today is depression / anxiety. Anxiety hasn't really walked in the room yet. We're already running out of time. So I'm not sure how much anxiety we're going to get to, but I don't know if Rene is now getting anxious trying to figure out how he's going to do that. But we invite your phone calls, 337-8874, and we're going to crash through the rest of the show as quickly as possible to get as much information out on either topic that we can. So let me kick it off with this question. Rene, welcome back. But here's where I was kind of thinking. You know, all of us, I think, probably experience times in our lives where we're less hopeful or more sad or feeling a little bit lost or out of sync with everybody else. And I think equally, all of us feel times when the pressure amps up a little bit, when we've got, you know, deadlines or we've got other things going on in our lives, or, you know, we can't, I don't know, make our ends meet financially right now with the economic crisis or whatever. What differentiates the anxiety and depression in its little instances in life versus something that really needs a professional level of support and care?
Well, Scott, it's what we call the problems of daily living.
Okay.
We go through our day's lives through the whole repetitious daily chores and activities, and we've run into some barriers, and you know, most people, they, you know, sometimes worry about these things, and they, that many are able to problem solve, and they're adaptive to the difficulties of the daily living. When it becomes more chronic, where depression and anxiety is, when people say, okay, my car's messed up, now my battery's no good now, it's probably something about me. What does it say about me? Am I cursed? And they start reading too much into things. And it starts, you know, creating more and more anxiety, and they start feeling, you know, more sad because of the different situations going on in their lives. And it's not that they're not able to handle it, it's how they interpret all these problems.
So you mean, you know, you mentioned activities of daily living. I'm thinking, like, there's like some basic ones, right? I mean, like taking a shower or keeping yourself clean or brushing your teeth or so. But then there's also kind of these second degree ones, like going to school or going to work or, you know, talking to your mom or, you know, whatever those are. At what level do those have to get interrupted or changed or diminished to constitute the need for care?
Well, once you see, and, you know, my focus have been on the elderly, apart from behavioral health services, and it's the level of hopelessness, sadness, when you see a person losing interest, they're just tired of getting up. You see more irritability, and it's, Scott, the model that's used by the American Psychological Association is 2-week period or longer when you see someone has a diminished capacity of life, and that's when they really need intervention. And family members want to start asking some questions. Well, you know, Dad, Mom, how do you feel about what's going on with you? What are you thinking? Are you able to sleep? Do you have disturbed sleep? How's your appetite?
And so when those things start chopping into you, so it could be somebody who's basically still got a job, which seems like a fairly high level of functioning, but they're not doing very well in their job.
Yeah, and they're enduring. And
you know, sense of enduring.
Yeah, they're enduring. They're just going through life. They're trying to just survive, and they become irritable. And
so life becomes a boring homework assignment.
Well, Scott, they just lost touch with what the fun parts of life.
They're not noticing those anymore.
No, and you know, they have recreational therapists. Many people haven't heard about that, but this new field is helping people find things in their lives that are meaningful, stuff that are fun, stuff that they could do.
Like shopping?
Well, you know, shopping, that's a whole other animal.
Credit card with no limit. That'd be fun, huh?
Yeah, but, you know, things they could do, activities, sports, and they could be able to start seeing that, you know, light in the end of the tunnel, or they could start living again.
How about fast food? Fast food's fun.
Well, yeah, that's another thing about nutrition, and you'll talk about that after in the treatment part, that nutrition does play a part, not a big part, but it's something that we have to watch out for, Scott.
You know, it seems like one of the aspects that when you're talking about kind of turning the corner into how to manage this is that people who are going through either anxiety or depression or both aren't taking as good of care, aren't taking really, you know, they almost need to take more care of themselves in difficult times. And at the same time, these disorders kind of almost help them to not remember to take care of themselves much at all.
Absolutely. And that's one of the hallmarks of depression and also anxiety. One thing about both of those, a lot of symptoms overlap. And, you know, one of the symptoms is, you know, loss of focus, forgetting things, loss of concentration. They forget to pay their bills. They forget to take their medications. And what happens, that just compiles the severity of the daily functionings, and that creates more problems, more health problems for the for these people.
So might anxiety / depression respond just to lifestyle changes?
Absolutely, Scott. And that's what I mentioned earlier, where it's really important for people to understand what's going on with them. Many people say, oh, that's just me, I'm depressed. And that's part of the aging process. And I differ, I beg to differ with that, because there's people who are very active at an old age. There's people who are ill, bedridden, and they find some type of meaning in their life. Many people who do well are the ones who believe there's something greater than themselves. It don't matter if it's a connection to a higher power, to God. It don't matter if they're the best, cooks, if they do something well. It's people who believe that there's something greater than themselves.
Family.
Do better, Scott.
So part of treatment then might be getting people back in touch with some of the specialness that they might have forgotten along the way.
Absolutely. And it's just reharnessing those skills that they use throughout their lives.
Okay. So what if the lifestyle changes, if you mentioned activity, like exercise and some other things, or kind of reconnecting. Okay, so all that stuff, maybe that stuff doesn't, maybe the thinking process, maybe the negative thinking, either, you know, with anxiety kind of driven stuff, like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? Or you know, the depressive stuff, like, there is no way out of this. Maybe that stuff's really taken root and is just real resistant. Is that where therapy comes in?
Yes, absolutely. Many times, I don't know if you ever read that book called Talking to Prozac, back in the late 90s, and it started a big fad where everybody started taking Prozac because that was the wonder pill. Prior to that, you know, we had the other medications, the MAOs, male inhibitors, and the tricyclids, and caused a lot of side effects, a lot of suicide. And Scott, once we started with Prozac, and people, even people who were well, thought that they would be able to be better marketers. Yeah, so, you know, and all of a sudden, now this medication, you know, became ubiquitous. It was everywhere. And the thing is that many people that were taking medication were not getting better. So they said, well, you know, let's go ahead and include psychotherapy. And this way, it could help people to see things differently, give them options. Maybe it's, I'm feeling this way because of that. Medication doesn't offer any solutions. Psychotherapy could be able to give you options, different options to think about things.
Okay, KUBO Radio is the station. Let's talk about it as a show. 337-8874 is the phone number. I'm Scott, your host. We're here with Renee Rodriguez, Masters of Social Work, psychiatric social worker for Imperial County. We're talking anxiety and depression. So if you're doing therapy, like let's say I come in and I hit you in one of the clinics and I've got depression, what kind of stuff do you start out having me do in terms of psychotherapy? Is there a certain flavor of psychotherapy that works best with depression, for example?
Well, Scott, in behavioral health services, we use cognitive behavior therapy. We have to use evidence-based practices. And cognitive behavior therapy has been shown to show a lot of improvement.
So there's like nutritional value for the therapy.
Absolutely.
They've tested it.
Mm. And of course, to be fair, there's IPT, interpersonal psychotherapy, that also have proven to be able to help people improve from symptoms.
Well, okay, so let's start with cognitive behavioral therapy. Let's say I walk in the door, I'm depressed. you're gonna do some of this voodoo that you do with cognitive behavioral therapy. What do I have to do? What do we say? How do we kick this off? And what are you looking for in terms of what happens to me?
Well, Scott, for one thing, depression, many people like Aaron Beck had said, is the thinking disorder. So what we do in CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, we let you think about and evaluate the conclusion about a life experience that you had, and to find evidence to the contrary. Many people who are depressed sway towards the negativity. This happens all because, you know, I'm all screwed up. This happens, it always happens to me. Oh, nobody likes me. And in CBT, it's a process that we take, and we talk to the people, and we go through the whole thinking process. People are always cognizing. They're always talking to themselves. And what we want to do is, when they talk to themselves, find out if what the conclusion they reached, the validity of it. Is it correct? Is it valid, the conclusion I made about myself?
So I'm going to come in, I'm going to basically convince you that I have really good reasons to be depressed. Because, you know, I've thought about it, obviously, and my thoughts are reaching that conclusion. And you're going to have me begin to look at my thoughts and see if they're really, really, really true thoughts or whether I'm just kind of looking at things with a negative opinion. Is that more or less it?
Well, you know, it takes more than that, Scott. Because what we do is when we interview the person for the first time, we want to find out the severity of the debilitating condition. Once we get them into therapy, we start with a process of asking them on, you know, what's going on in their lives, and we try to find a way of their style of thinking. We want to find out what their automatic thoughts are. And
what is an automatic thought?
Automatic thoughts, Scott, is there's different thoughts that pop into your mind. As I said, we're always talking to ourselves.
So like when the light turns yellow and I think, floor it. No.
Well, you know,
it seems pretty automatic.
It's very healthy automatic thoughts. Like right now, I'm thinking I gotta stop in the bank and pick up some money. There's the automatic thought that
for
I
me, that's so kind of you.
Yeah.
You know, typically, the guests don't pay the host, but we're willing to make exceptions.
You know, and there's the automatic thoughts that affect one's condition. They start saying, oh no, I could be sitting here right now and looking at Scott, and the way you're looking at me, my automatic thought could be, oh no, Scott may think that I don't know what I'm talking about. Now, what does it say about me?
That's a pretty negative thought, huh?
Yes. So we go into
I'm not thinking.
Thank you.
Clarify
but
that.
By the way, Scott, we have those automatic thoughts, and then we have the deeper thoughts, the more
well, and think,
carbon
think about what that feeling, you know, think if for example, if you were thinking, if you looked at me and I'm just kind of looking like my typical glazed look at people, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, Scott, you know, doesn't think, Scott thinks that I'm like complete zero, and then you actually think that what I think matters, because I guess that would count too. Then that's kind of a depressive provoking thought or anxiety provoking thought, because then now you're panicking. Oh my goodness, what am I going to say? I better pull this one out of the fire. Yada yada. You know. So I think that's a really good description of how a thought, an automatic thought, a thought that you didn't even really kind of try to look for, jumps up and it can push your feelings into either a sad, hopeless place like, oh, I'm never going to be any good at this, or a panicky place like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
Absolutely, Scott. And to answer your question, yeah, there's the automatic thoughts we go through, and then we go under the underlying assumptions, and that's more deeper thoughts that they have about themselves. The what-if questions, you know, what if I do this? What does that mean about me? And then we go into the lower layer, which is the core beliefs. It takes a lot longer, Scott. It probably takes, you know, 2 to 6 months to be able to go to a core beliefs. I'm no good. I always been this way. And to be able to change that thought, it takes some time. Now, not to say that, you know, CBT is extremely important, but there's also things that we have to consider. Have the persons go out and exercise. Have the persons go out and find something enjoyable to be able to work with, so they could be able to start going towards that process of recovery.
So part of it is doing this work on your thinking patterns. And you're suggesting that those thinking patterns come from kind of deeper held core beliefs, I guess.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, building this kind of lifestyle that's basically saying fake it till you make it. You know, so if I act like a non-depressed person, eventually I may be so busy having fun that I may not be depressed.
Well, yeah, Scott, and if you're acting like a non-depressed person, those symptoms are going to surface in some disturbance. It could be sleep, it could be appetite, and it could be uncontrollable irritability with family members, the closest ones to you.
Well, what if I just tell myself when I start feeling those things that hey, it's just my depression trying to get back at me, and I'm not going to let it.
And once you're able to do that, you already mastered, and you're able to adapt to the circumstances at hand. And that's part of the goal of cognitive behavior therapy, to be able to have you think about that and to find different adaptive values and interpretations you give to your thoughts.
So it's really, first of all, gaining an awareness of your thinking process and then using different management skills to kind of handle the thoughts as they come along in ways that so that they don't end up causing all these repercussions and harm.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Scott.
Neat. Very, very cool. So you're doing this with are you working in our anxiety and depression clinic?
No, I'm working with the children's, and I work with adults in San Pasquale.
Oh, okay, very good. In Winter Haven, huh?
Yeah, two different populations. But many of the symptoms are the same for both. And, you know, you have your symptoms of restlessness, fatigue.
No, you know, we are the poorest county in the known universe at this point. And we have all these kind of economic stressors and you know, we're drug corridor, you know, yada 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 yada. And Winter Haven's actually, you know, a little bit worse off in some respects in terms of geographic isolation and lower socioeconomic stuff going on. Do those things contribute to that community? Do you, when working in that community, do you see that as being adding flame to the fire or something? I don't know.
Well, yeah, a couple of things about that. For the, you know, elderly who are more isolated, there's less transportation available to them. That could factor into the equation. For the younger crowds who there's a lack of work availability, for the younger crowds who have less resources, of course, there's going to be a higher risk, a higher vulnerability.
Well, because
to depression.
I mean, we've kind of talked about, you know, having this sense of meaning to your life and that being one of the core aspects of kind of protective factor almost. And you know, when you take away economic opportunity, when you take away mobility, when you take away connectedness in the community, because you've got these, you know, in Winter Haven, some of these houses are really widely spaced out, and, you know, it's hot here in the summertime. You know, you've taken away some of the possible protective factors for people not running into kind of depressive types of circumstances.
Yes, and you talk about the environmental factor, Scott. However, back to the core of the cognitive state is how we interpret,
yes,
our experiences, what we say about it, and how we work through that, how we process it, how we're able to express that to somebody and say, listen, I think I may need help. Now, it's an anonymity for somebody to say, hey, listen, I'm suffering from hopelessness, I have suicidal ideation, I'm doing this, please help me. Many adults don't do that. Many seniors don't do that. And
well, there's some culture behind that.
Yeah, there is. And the thing about it is that's why it's so important to family members. You out there who's taking care of an elderly person, you out there who is going to visit them, and you want to look for those flags, you want to look for the irritability, the non-compliance, the hopelessness, people who say, why am I here? I should just be dead. And start asking more questions and start inquiring more. And seek some help. Ask questions. Behavioral Health Services is able to provide that seniors program that be able to go to a home and do an evaluation. A lot of people don't know about that.
Sure. That sounds like a really valuable service.
Absolutely, Scott. And I have referred many people to this program, and they're very prompt. They go out, they do an evaluation. And
that's for seniors, correct?
Yes, sir. It's a specific
Power
program
elders.
For seniors. So, of course, it's very important to be able to bring an intervention to be able to prevent more debilitating conditions.
Well, hopefully, as a result of something like this radio show, you get people who are able to listen or connect to this and say, oh, geez, I guess I do have a problem because this is kind of what's going on with me. But more importantly, as you're suggesting, it's community and family checking in with each other and taking care of each other and being curious and caring with each other in ways that help people identify that, hey, it's maybe not going so well right now. Maybe I could use a little help.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. It's teamwork. Being able to work with the senior citizens or who's ever experiencing these conditions. And likewise, being able to say, yes, I'm feeling this. Being able to be truthful about it so they could be able to start increasing their quality of life. After all, Scott, life is short. To live in a deep life where you're just so depressed and, it's so diminished and you're just trying to endure every day, it's not part of the aging process. It's not supposed to be.
You don't have to do that, huh?
You don't have to do that. So it's really important that family members are looking out for those symptoms. Irritability is one of the important things when the senior citizens tell me, I used to be able to do this, now I can no more. Unfortunately, that's, the past productive years. They're in this new stage of life where they have some control within this stage of life. And not to blur the other stages with the present one, because they're still able to do things.
Nice. So you're doing this out in Winter Haven. Right off the top of your head, you got the Winter Haven phone number in case people are interested in accessing services in that area?
Well, Scott, I don't have the phone number for Winter Haven. However, the 482-4000 number
Perfect.
For Behavioral Health Services will be able to send whatever information, give you whatever information if you call in, and they'll be able to promptly give you the resources that you need to be able to get help for yourself, for your family, for your neighbors.
Perfect. Good save there. Thanks for coming aboard today, Renee. We're kind of like out of time and got to move on with our lives. And
well, Scott, I appreciate you.
I'm going to pay attention to the stuff that I'm thinking today because you kind of helped me to see that, if you don't pay attention to it, it may be grabbing you.
All righty. Well, thank you very much, Scott, for inviting me here.
Sure. This is Let's Talk About It, sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Another end of our show. We'll get this up on podcast early next week, probably. Thank you for listening. Join us again next week. We'll still be here. Hope you're here, too. Take care.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.